call the Senate Finance Committee meeting to order. We're in Juneau. Today's Friday, February the 12th. Today we are going to have the mental health and operating budget, Senate Bills 144 and 168. At the table today we have Senator McKinnon, Senator Bishop, Senator Machicki, Senator Olson, Senator Von Imhoff, and Senator Stevens. As I said, we're taking up the operating budget, Senate Bill 44, and the mental health budget, Senate Bill 143. In addition, we will have a presentation from OMB Director Pat Pitney on the governor's various supplemental requests this morning. For the public's information, the committee substitute for the operating budget and the mental health budget in front of the committee today are simply a rearrangement of the governor's budget request in a form that both legislative legal and legislative finance believe are appropriate. So there are no financial changes in the substitute. I will entertain a motion to adopt the CS for Senate Bill 144, and then we'll have explanation of that. Do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill number 144, Finance 30-GS2564, /D, Wallace, dated 1/29/18.
And I will object for explanation. Can we have the Legislative Director, David Teal, come forward, and anyone that he may want with him to explain the CS. Mr. Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. David Teal, Director of Legislative Finance Division. Version D, which you have in front of you, is, with a few exceptions, uses the same transactions, meaning the same fund sources, in the same amount, in the same locations in the budget as the governor's bill. Those few exceptions are some contingent appropriations, the CBR language, $425 million, $420 million, $400 million, depending on how you count it. Okay. And then there's an appropriation of 1.1 for hotshot crews in DNR. We treat contingencies as the maximum value, and the governor's budget treats them as the minimum. So with those two differences, the transactions are the same. The point in creating version D, instead of simply using the governor's budget, is that version D has gone through the conforming technical changes at legal services so that the bill is now ready to amend without worrying about having amendments fixing all those language changes, references, etc., so that you're not going to be dealing with format changes as you start the amendment process. But for all practical purposes, the bill is the governor's bill.
Do we have any questions regarding the CS? Senator Machicki?
Just curious, you talked about the maximum and minimum value. So is the bottom line number change because of that different view?
Through the chair, Senator Machicki, it does. Our version of the bill is higher because they have a transaction, for instance, for a hotshot cruise of $1.1 million, that says we'll use general funds if the federal funds for that purpose don't materialize. They count general fund spending as zero, and we count it as $1.1 million because that's what you may spend on that purpose. So,
Senator Machicki.
No, that helps. Thank you.
So I'm not going to go through the bill point by point. There's a two-page document that explains some of the larger changes. You also have a document that is a full document compare of the governor's bill to version D. And if you want to go through that, you'll see every change of this to the or the, you know, any a typo fix, a reference change, it'll all appear in that Word document.
So the technical changes are brought forward, and any substantive amendments will be addressed by each subcommittee member, and those amendments will be brought forward to the full finance committee after that public process. And as normal, we will be waiting for the operating budget from the other body. Senator McKinnon?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So this budget, as proposed by the governor, does not include community assistance?
Through the chair, Senator, community assistance is in the sense that he included a supplemental appropriation, bringing the year-end FY18 balance up to the $90 million, which allows a $30 million appropriation or distribution to communities in FY19. However, there is no FY19 funding for community assistance, as Ledge Finance believes should be there. We say that the law referring to use of excess power cost equalization endowment funds to fund community assistance was drafted in a way that was, you were supposed to use FY17 excess earnings for a deposit in FY19. That isn't done, so the way the bill is now is that communities will get $30 million in 19, but with no money in there yet for FY20, that distribution would drop to $20 million next year.
That is why at a previous finance meeting I stated that the governor is short funding the future and not following the intent of the legislation that was passed by this body and the other body. So the people the communities that are dependent upon the revenue sharing program cannot plan forward, and should understand that the governor's budget short funds the program in the future. And as Director Teal said, if nothing is done, we could see a substantial one-third drop in the revenue sharing appropriations, and the community should know that they cannot depend on those sources of funds in their planning process, which was the original intent of the legislation. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The second item is the pensions, and as I understand it, we'll have a meeting next week regarding possible new calculations, but what the governor has in hand for the actuarial calculation for our retirement system is not included at the number requested. Is that accurate?
Director Teal?
What the actuaries say, Mr. Teal, should be contributed at this point.
Through the chair, the June 6th of 16 valuation, which determines the FY19 rates, says that the state assistance contributions to retirement, PERS and TERS, which is the state employees and then teachers' employees, should have been about $299 million. In 2015, there was a large deposit to the retirement systems, and in that bill there was some intent that suggested that it would be nice to shorten the three-year rate-setting lag to 2 years. They started that process, and the valuation, the June of 16 valuation, has been updated with some new assumptions, some returns, et cetera, trying to shorten that lag to 2 years. And the impact of that is a reduction of state assistance of about $35 million. most of that due to exceptional returns experienced in FY17. So if you wanted to fully fund, it would be $299. If you want to begin the process of shortening the lag, it would be about $35 million less than that. And then the governor's bill builds in some retirement savings. It's referred to as the AGWIP program. It's a group waiver for retirees on drug costs. If that works as planned, there would be additional savings beginning in 19 of about $50 to $60 million a year, and that's a calendar year. So the first fiscal year would be approximately $25 million in savings, and the governor's budget builds those savings in immediately, even though they're not yet achieved. And the argument that I think the committee will want to consider when you have the retirement discussion is whether you want to build in potential savings before they've materialized and immediately, or whether you want to use traditional actuarial methods and say, if we experience savings in 19, then that will go in the 19 valuation and be used to set rates 2 years later or even 3 years later as the process works now. So it seems to us that they're simply taking very early advantage of savings that have not yet materialized.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I still have some trepidation about how the administration took the $3 billion cash infusion that was trying to increase the funding ratio on the retirees and use it for a portion of it, $200 million plus, for health, because we're seeing increased growth now when we look at the trajectory of how our pension, unfunded pension obligation is going to be calculated for us. So in future years, we're seeing $500 million due now, and some of it is attributable to not placing the $200 million into either TERS or PERS. And we did do a distinction as a body when we passed those bills as far as where we wanted a majority of the funding to go into TERS, because that was 100% our responsibility. And we did want to make a contribution to the PERS, which is about 60% in large numbers our responsibility. Mr. Chairman, the only last update I have for clarity on the budget as far as short funding goes and lack of transparency is the tax credits. And while I know there's arguments on both sides of the legislature regarding whether when we should pay these payments, the governor's team has been at these microphones stating that we owe the money to companies that have come forward. And so could you talk to me about how short-funded, based on current statutes, how short-funded tax credits are in the budget?
Director Teal.
Senator, before I go to there, I might suggest that if you're going to talk about retirement next week, that you look at the actuarial projections, and you'll note that the funding ratio, which Senator McKinnon mentioned, that we closed the system, and that theoretically we brought that funding ratio up to 80%, and you should see it go increasing year by year until the last tier one, tier two, tier three worker is employed. And so you've got roughly 20 years to go up to 100% funding. Instead of going up by 1 point per year, the funding ratio has actually fallen in recent years. It's projected to continue to fall, and as Senator McKinnon mentioned, future contributions are expected to increase. So I think the question you would be asking is, why are we decreasing contributions now in the face of falling funding ratios and increasing contributions in the future? It's a it's not a factual decision. It's a philosophical thing. Now, turning to tax credits, the statutory minimum would be $206 million. That is what you should put in the fund this year to purchase the tax credits. There's an alternative interpretation of that, which would say that you can go as low as $49 million. The Department of Revenue can or has explained that to you. They will also say that they don't support that. They support the $206 million level of funding. The governor's budget contains $27 million for oil and gas tax credits. That doesn't go into the fund. That is what the cost of debt service would be on issuing bonds to fully buy the outstanding tax credits, and then because you're borrowing money to buy them all now, you would have debt service payments, and the first year's debt service is $27 million. So I guess to restate that, there is no money deposited into the oil and gas tax credit purchase fund in the budget. It is instead a $27 million appropriation to pay debt service on bonds that would be used to buy credits.
And that is the largest amount, you know, and it depends upon the legislature passing legislation. And for transparency, I agree with you, you know, the probability of any piece of legislation passing has to go through a rigorous process, through the committee process, pass both bodies. So I would agree all three of those items are substantial numbers that need to be addressed, but the CS does not address any of those, and we will be taking those amendments up and addressing at least those three and all the others that the subcommittee brings forward to this full body of the Senate Finance Committee. Senator McKinnon?
Mr. Chairman, my final comment is this budget is lower than...
Substantially lower.
Lower than it should be if we were trying to compare apples to apples. And we did have the department, the administration before us, talking about the ability of... the word may. So in the tax credit discussion, even on the proposed bill that's before us, which is outside of our conversation today, but we were told that companies would have a choice, that they may go into this financing proposition if the legislature passed it. But if no money is in the fund, I just wonder how genuine that offer is on the form of may. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Are there any other questions regarding the CS? Senator Machicki.
This is a question for you, Mr. Chairman. How do we balance that as we're preparing the budget between this the fourth budget that we've dealt with that has legislation included in the budget document that has not yet passed, in several cases it has not passed? Is your plan sort of to remain pure on unpassed legislation not being included in the budget process, or are you going to do some kind of balance of considering the potential for it to pass?
Well, the way that that we're working with Director Teal's office is to have that include those items, particularly those three, added as the base from where we're coming forward with, and then dealing with it from that standpoint, because I don't believe that it's proper for us to have a starting base and then add to it and show that we, the legislature, are increasing the budget accordingly. It is not the legislature that is increasing it. We're going to start from the starting base of what is statutorily required.
Mr. Chairman, just to follow up, so we're going to actually take a completely transparent approach.
That's correct.
If legislation passes in the meantime, that would be reflected in a final budget document.
Yes.
Likely, if not, we're going to put real costs.
That's correct.
Use real costs. Thank you.
Mr. Teal.
Mr. Chairman, just to emphasize that point, legislative finance would have preferred that the three fiscal notes that are built into the budget, one is the oil and gas tax credits, there's senior benefits, and then there's school trust fund. We would have preferred to see them as fiscal notes. In other words, for tax credits, for instance, we would have preferred a $206 million appropriation in the bill and a fiscal note reducing that amount and changing it to debt service. Same with the other fiscal notes. We would have preferred them being omitted from the budget and put in strictly as a fiscal note. That said, there are also half a dozen supplemental appropriations in the operating budget. You may also want to decide how you want to treat those supplementals, strip them from the bill, put them in a supplemental bill, or leave them where they are. The point I want to emphasize here is that this is not a bill, this meaning version D that's in front of you, is not a legislative finance bill in any sense of recommendations or anything else. It is a rewrite of the governor's proposals. It contains the fiscal notes that he had in. It contains the supplemental appropriations that he had in. And it's up to the amendment process to change that.
And for the committee's information, they may recall that I made that statement that the practice for 20 years has been not to include supplementals that the governor has included, and that is also going to be addressed. So from a transparency viewpoint, this committee is going to be starting from a budget that we feel is more transparent than the transparent governor's submittal. Further questions? Senator Machicki.
One more, Mr. Chairman. I don't know what your plan is for going through this today, but is there an opportunity to highlight the supplemental items that were included in this budget, or is that something you want to do later in the process?
I would rather do them later. What we're trying to do is adopt a budget that is technically correct, that we can start from and move forward, and that is true for the operating budget and the mental health budget as well.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Further questions? Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Teal, as we look at what's going on here, there's obviously a difference between the philosophical and political implications that are out there related to the budget. And as you propose that you're suggesting that it would have been better to go ahead and use financial or fiscal notes rather than the other things, there's that tug of war that goes on. But is there actually a financial difference in the budget when you use fiscal notes as traditionally has been used as opposed to what the governor's proposed plan is, or his the way he's presented the budget?
Through the chair, Senator Olson, there's no difference as long as the legislation passes. I mean, if you're going to put money in the operating budget and it's contingent on passage of a bill, or whether you simply have a fiscal note that is then added to the, as long as the fiscal note matches the amount of money that's currently in the budget and the bill passes, there is no difference.
Further clarification, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Olson.
As you look at what's going on here, we obviously are in unprecedented times with the CBR running out and the earnings reserve being looked at and picked at. Do you fault the governor for going ahead and going this separate route to look at it from another perspective? We all talk about transparency. And it's been more than one time we've heard of this table. But do you fault the governor for that?
Through the chair, I don't. I think that transparency is in the eye of the beholder. They're trying to present a budget that seems transparent to them. I may say I don't find the presentation transparent. Your conclusion is whether it's easier to understand the way the governor presented it or the more traditional presentation. Which
no further questions, Chairman.
Thank you, Senator Olson. Are there any further questions? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Are there further objections to the adoption of the CS or the operating budget? Seeing none, that motion is passed. That brings us to Senate Bill 143, the mental health budget. May we have a motion to adopt the CS for the same purposes of making it technically correct. Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, I move the CS for Senate Bill number 143, Finance 30-GS2566-D, Wallace, dated 1/29/18.
Thank you, and I will object for discussion purposes. Director Teal.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Again, this is version D of the bill. It was drafted with the same considerations for all practical purposes. It is the governor's bill. It gives you a clean starting point by incorporating format changes, section references, section locations, and other technical and conforming changes. But the transactions that make up the bill are identical to the governor's.
Thank you, Director Teal. Are there any questions regarding this CS? Seeing none, I will remove my objection. Are there any further objections? Seeing none, that CS is adopted. We will take a brief at ease while we change presenters and prepare the projector. We're at ease. Call the Senate Finance Committee back to order. Next, we have Pat Pitney, the Director of the Office of the Governor's Office of Management and Budget, at the table to go over the supplemental request. Committee members have a binder on their desks with a spreadsheet and the backup material that we will be going through today. I've asked that we cover all the proposed supplemental requests at this time, regardless of which bill they appear in. Ms. Pitney, please proceed with your testimony. Presentation, I mean.
Thank you, Chair Hoffman. I'd also like to introduce our Chief Budget Analyst, Neil Steininger, and he will be going through a lot of the line-by-line detail. The request from the chairman's office was to go through supplementals that were included in the December 15th budget, as well as the supplementals that were included in the supplemental timeline. We presented the supplementals in December 15th to give as much advanced information as we had at that time. There was $170 million in unrestricted general fund supplementals at that time. As you recall, the CBR threshold that was voted on was $200 million additional funds for to accommodate supplementals. In the January 29 supplementals, there was $7.9 million in unrestricted general fund. But in total, the supplemental bill came in $5 million below where we were for the January 29 supplementals. With that, we'll start on a line-by-line basis.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Pitney, when I look at the spreadsheet, I do notice that you're $5 million under total, but your UGF spend went up by $8 million. Can you speak to that?
Director Pitney.
Yes,
the UGF increment.
Through the chairs, Senator McKinnon, yes, I did say in the opening comments that the unrestricted general fund was up $170 million in unrestricted general fund in the supplementals we submitted in December 15, and another $7.9 million for the supplementals we submitted in the January bill. And so I'm asking Neil Steininger to go through line by line what those are, and if it's the pleasure of the committee, we could start with that 7.9 first and come back.
Mr. Chairman, all I wanted to know was what's the big driver in the $7 million of UGF? If you don't know that, I can wait for it in the further presentation.
Okay. Chair Hoffman, would you prefer starting with the December supplementals, or do we want to
Senator
start
McKinnon,
with
you? What was your question? She can wait. We'll proceed with the presentation. Okay. But there is an additional capital item of $6 million that you did not mention, which is also UGF. Please proceed.
Through the chair, for the record, Neil Steininger, Chief Budget Analyst, Office of Management and Budget. Starting on line two, we'll start with the December 15th language section items included in the governor's budget. The first item is public defenders for the Department of Administration, total unrestricted general fund of $453,500. Line three is $10,447,000. For the Department of Corrections, this covers additional needs from more inmates than were anticipated when the FY18 budget was crafted. Line four is an additional $10,341,000, and that is for health care needs for inmates within the Department of Corrections. Line five is $400,000 in designated general funds. This is a multi-year appropriation for the Mount Edgecombe School Aquatic Center for operations of that facility. Line six, this is a extension of a multi-year appropriation for the Department of Education. This is to extend the Every Student Succeeds Act support. The original appropriation was a multi-year for 17 and 18. This extends it into FY19. Line 7 is $92,986,000 for Health and Social Services Medicaid. This is to bring the FY18 appropriation up to the projections for the total cost of the Medicaid program in fiscal year 18. Line 8, at the time the governor's budget was crafted, the CHIP program, the Children's Health Insurance Program, had not yet been reauthorized by the federal government, so we included this item to ensure there's adequate funding to continue that program if it was not reauthorized. Subsequently, it has been reauthorized by the federal government. Line 9 is a item allowing for the Department of Health and Social Services to expend any additional federal revenue that they are able to collect for the Medicaid program. Line 10 is a $18 million multi-year program within the Division of Behavioral Health for Substance Use Disorder Grants. This was included in the supplemental budget in order to allow them to address the need as quickly as possible.
Can you speak to the need for a multi-year appropriation?
Yes, this is the multi-year appropriation runs from fiscal year 18 to 21. The grants will go out, and it allows for time for the actual providers to build up capacity for services. And so that the buildup of the capacity takes more than just one fiscal year. So it provides the time for that capacity to be built.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Is this for, we just had a presentation on the autism new regs. Is this for that?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, it's not for autism. This is more targeted towards substance use disorder items. So to address the opioid epidemic.
Okay.
Senator Von Imhoff.
And when you say $18 million, is this, you said it's a four-year grant, so it's $18 million over the course of 4 years, so like roughly $4.5 million a year over the course of 4 years? It's not $18 million each year?
Yeah. Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, that's correct. It's $18 million spread across 4 years.
Okay, one last question.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So why ask for the full $18 million up front? Why not ask for $4 million each year?
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, having the $18 million upfront and guaranteeing that funding over 4 years provides certainty to those providers who would be, you know, building up the capacity for services.
Okay, so I...
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. There is flexibility then in that number that we could at least bring it down to at least 1 year. So we have that flexibility if we so choose. But I understand your need to have a guaranteed... a surety, but in this fiscal times, maybe we'll have to be a little bit more thoughtful in that area, but thank you.
Please proceed.
Thank you. Just on that point, isn't it unusual? This doesn't, a supplemental is typically covering past spending, and you actually uniquely bridge the past and 3 years into the future, which I would rather have seen, whether or not we support this change, I would rather have seen the $6 million in the, or the $4 million in the past funding and the remainder in the budget document for FY19. Isn't that more typical?
Through the chair.
Director Pitney.
Senator Machicki, this was a very conscious choice. We could have put the $18 million, and in fact, when we reported our transparent budget calculation, we put the $18 million in the FY19 column because most of the money would be spent. But we wanted to put it in as a supplemental so that the grant process could start as early as possible, maybe as early as end of April or early May. This is part of our Public Safety Action Plan commitment and addressing these, our lack of substance abuse treatment. And it is modeled after the supplemental substance abuse treatment put in about, I think it was in the 16, in the 15 or 16 budget. 16 budget, because that was our first.
Further question, have those communities that are recipients, have they been identified and the amounts identified as well?
Through the chair, I'd have to check with, or Chair Hoffman, I'll have to check with Department of Health and Social Services. There was a process that was the process put forward in the last round had identified providers and the overall emphasis for substance abuse treatment in the state. I'm sure there's lists of interested parties, and we can follow up with Health and Social Services to get those.
Thank you, Director. Please proceed.
Lines 11 and 12 are for judgments, claims, and settlements against the state. You'll see one specific item, $322,000 for a wage and hour settlement in the Department of Environmental Conservation. Line 13 is to add a special assistant to preserve and protect Department of Defense investment in Alaska. That is for $94,000 in the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs.
Sir, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Von Imhoff, then Senator Bishop.
Thank you. So this particular special assistant to preserve and protect Department of Defense investment in Alaska, isn't that something that we should have been doing all along and for years, advocating for all during the base closures and growth of the F-35s and so forth? I feel that that's something that we've been doing for years successfully.
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, this is a BRAC emphasis and that same concept of protecting those investments, and the administration as a whole has been very active in that. During the budget reductions, the BRAC specialist in Department of Military and Veterans Affairs was eliminated. This is bringing that position back because we do believe it's critical and ongoing. So this was a reduction in the past that we're filling, and we believe it's important enough to bring it on now.
Senator Von Imhoff and Senator Bishop.
Well, last
Senator
question. McKinnon. It would just be, I'll look and see, but how many employees are currently in the Military and Veteran Affairs? And I understand that you said this position has been removed, but I just find it interesting that this is not already being done with its existing employees, that this is a priority. This would be the most important thing. And I would think that with their hundreds of employees that are there already, this would already be done by multiple people on multiple efforts, cooperating among each other, that this would be the priority of the commissioner. Mm-hmm. So that's just
thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just on line 11, if you could, I don't need it here, but I'd like to have some more detail on the wage and hour.
Thank you, Senator Bishop. Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On line 11, Alaska, at least in the past, has suffered from not having guidelines on arbitration. Is the administration going to introduce a bill to provide some guidelines on arbitration for Alaska?
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, we can check with the Department of Labor and see if there's a priority on that.
It's the Department of Administration, I believe, that you would need to run an arbitration policy through. Right now, when arbitrators look at the state's finances, they include the permanent fund itself as well, or I should say the permanent fund earning reserve account. And so while that hasn't been used as a funding source before, arbitrators continue to use it against Alaska and settle in favor of others when they make claims against the state. We've actively chosen as an administration not to create our own guidelines. So I just put it on the record. It would be nice if we did, because if we precluded the earnings reserve, we might win some of those suits that are brought against us. But, Mr. Chairman, my real question is on line 13. Why is this a supplemental item and not in the normal course of the regular budgeting process for a full-time FTE?
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, we felt it was important enough to bring this position online, and are requesting the funding that, as Senator Von Imhoff said, this is a priority. It's a broad priority, and when we felt we were not giving it the attention we needed, we have bolstered that, and this is the cost associated with it.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator McKinnon,
we just actually had some pretty intense lobbying and received, with the support of our congressional delegation, the F-35s up in the Fairbanks area. So I'm not sure what is at risk right now as the federal government is increasing military presence. So it seems like an easier time than now to protect our assets than in the past when we actually made special appropriations. So it's perplexing that it's a critical issue for a supplemental item at this time. Military is important to our state, and whenever needed, we have always advocated to retain a strong Alaska's presence. But I just question this, Mr. Chairman, in the supplemental, let alone whether we actually need it at this point in time.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Senator Machicki.
So I want to be careful because sometimes they can come across as us being negative to our friend Pat Pitney, and I think very highly of you, and you are a good friend, and you have a different job than we do, but our job is, I have the DMVA budget, they bring us those requests, and we work through that process in a very public process, and then we work out the differences with the House, and then a budget passes. And it's disheartening to see that when the administration disagrees with the end result, although he signed the budget last year to add a position, I think you know that that's just going to be a reaction. It's probably not a particularly negative one. It's just not how the process is designed to work. We're happy if you bring this forward in the DMVA budget. We'll discuss it publicly. But I can tell you, if I have an opportunity to not support it in the supplemental, I'm not going to. I just don't think it's the way that we do business here.
Thank you, Senator Machicki. Director Pitney, is this position currently filled?
Chair Hoffman, I believe it is, but I'll have to double check.
If it is filled, I would suggest that the administration not fill positions that are requested in a supplemental until the supplemental is approved. It looks as though when that process is followed, it looks as though the legislature does not have a say on what happens, and I think more likely not approving things that the administration puts into a supplemental request and fills it as if though it has been approved. I would strongly suggest that practice not be followed. Please proceed. Senator Bishop.
Thank you. Just a comment. I think that we just increased our military spending at the federal level to almost $500 million in the last 6 hours, too. So,
thank you, Senator Bishop.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, did you ask whether the position was filled, or did you just warn them not to fill it? Maybe we should ask directly.
I asked if it was filled.
And it is filled?
That's my understanding.
Senator McKinnon. Mr. Chairman, you know, our job is to represent the people of Alaska. And the one thing that we have to do is appropriating a budget. The frustration that some of us are finding right now that is not directed at Director Pitney but the entire management team is that when we see supplementals that are out of control and the legislature being ignored, there's a problem with a balance of power. We're hiring people before we have money to do it, and that's the problem over in the Medicaid budget. $170 million supplemental, $100 million in round numbers. I think that's been brought down to $93 million. But we are not responding to the fiscal situation we're in. And I just want the people who sent me to Juneau to understand it's frustrating from our perspective because we are trying to do the right thing for the people. We are trying to hold people accountable, but we have a supplemental in front of us that, while it might seem like a small amount and a good thing to invest in, $94,000 has been deployed, and a retirement benefit is associated with that deployment, I'm guessing, and the legislature is being ignored. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
My point exactly. Director Pitney, please proceed.
Line 14 is $221,000 in unrestricted general funds and $663,000 in federal receipts to cover the operations and maintenance of facilities to support C-17 aircraft for the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs. On the next page, line 15, the Clatina Lake Road Survey. This is a multi-year item from fiscal year 18 to 20 for $350,000 in unrestricted general fund.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Am I recalling correctly that the Attorney General had negotiated a settlement around this access and that the corporation rejected the settlement, and does this have anything to do with the money that we're spending here? Why are we spending it?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, this is related to the overall area, and it is not directly related to the settlement, but it will substantially improve the information and lines on a map that will help in the future of the settlement, however it is resolved.
Senator McKinnon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Pitney, does it benefit the region or the corporation more, or does it benefit the state of Alaska?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, it gives clarity of the land and the lines based on the legal descriptions, and puts the survey out there, so there's an understanding, a factual understanding of where it's at. There, I don't believe that it is a for one party or another party. It's a required piece to resolve the overall. It's not part of the settlement. Otherwise, it would have been in judgments and settlements. But it is part of getting to resolution in that whole area.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
But it's my understanding that the corporation acknowledges a narrower right of way, and is there a dispute on the width of that right of way that exists today, and why is that existing right of way that is acknowledged being disputed by the state? I think that is the question that is in front of the legislature. The dispute isn't access, but the size of that access.
Chair Hoffman, that would be a question that we'd have to get with the Department of Law and get the specifics on it.
Thank you. Please proceed.
Line 16 is a deposit of $30 million in designated general funds from the Power Cost Equalization Fund into the Community Assistance Fund. Line 17 is language which allows for deposit of investments from outside parties into the Alaska Liquefied Natural Gas Fund.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So with line 17, I don't see there's any fiscal note now, but by voting on this, assuming that we do, are we granting then blanket permission to allow essentially AGDC to accept any investment money that comes in the next fiscal year and then from any source? And then do we, as the legislature, by this vote here, give up our right to review the money that's coming in and to see what kind of conditions, what kind of stipulations, what kind of liability that we have made with that? So I'm not really sure why this line item is here. And what does it mean?
Mm-hmm. Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, SB 138 that established the AGDC's rules of operation and their corporate status puts a board over, as the oversight for the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation, and the corporation is a state corporation, but it's separate. There's within the statute put forward on with Senate Bill 138, it defines the powers of AGDC and of the board. And what this budget authority allows is, yes, for them to accept investments from third parties for the development of the gas line. And again, the statute puts forward the boundaries of the corporation's powers, and the approval then of that investment and the strength of that investment is through the board of AGDC. And it could be from any party, but there will be due diligence through the board of the Alaska Gasline Development Corporation. And if you think from a third party's perspective, if every third party who invests in the gas line needs to be vetted through the legislative process, and the legislative process is by design a 90-day process, it would be difficult for an investor to feel secure about moving the project forward.
Senator Von Imhoff.
I guess what I understand your comments. I just worry that if we vote to pass this line item, that we potentially, because this is a special project and it's such a large one and it's so complicated, that we may give up a stop sign or a layer of oversight on this monumental, potentially change the course of our state and positively or potentially negatively. It's hard to say at this point. And I think at this juncture, I personally am not ready to give up that layer of participation. So that's just my thoughts on it.
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Director Teal, please proceed. I mean, Director Pitney, please proceed.
Lines 18 and 19 represent a transfer of the balance of the in-state natural gas pipeline fund into the liquefied natural gas project fund. On the next page, line 20 represents a deposit from the power cost equalization fund into the renewable energy grant fund of $14 million. Line 21 is a deposit of $23,918,000 from the general fund into the Marine Highway System Fund.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, you and I have worked on REFACT, Alaska's Renewable Energy Advisory Team, for some time, and I'm looking at line 16 in relationship to line 20. And I note that that the administration is spending $44 million of the $55 million available. And I just haven't flipped ahead to know if the other $10, $11 million Did I have that right? Yeah, 44. Is that used somewhere else? The difference between the 55 and those two single appropriations?
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, yes, it is. It's in the capital budget.
Okay, so we won't see it here. That's what I wanted to know. Thank you.
Capital budget. Please proceed.
Let's see, we were on, I believe, line 21. That is the deposit into the Marine Highway System Fund from the general fund of $23,918,000. Line 24, this is a capital appropriation to the Alaska Energy Authority in the amount of $8,125,000. This is related to the Volkswagen settlement for the excess nitrogen emissions. Line 25 is a $6 million UGF capital project for the Alaska Marine Highway System vessel overhaul and annual certification.
This is the only capital appropriation that's in this budget?
Chair Hoffman, yes. It's the only unrestricted general fund capital.
So starting on line 28, these are capital language items within the December 15th budget. Line 28 is a reappropriation of $200,000 in municipal matching for municipal matching grants project administration within the Department of Environmental Conservation. Line 29 is a reappropriation for the Department of Transportation for ADAC airport maintenance and operations. The $10 million that was provided to the state when we took on the ADAC airport will be exhausted. This will allow the department to move forward and find a sustainable way to operate that airport. Line 30 is a reappropriation for the commuter rail concept, estimated to be $4,541,000, again for the Department of Transportation.
Mr. Chairman, I have a question about that.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Have there been previous studies on this commuter rail concept? And if so, do you know when they were and where they are, and are you utilizing them?
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I believe there's been multiple studies on this, and the governor has appointed a task force, primarily the mayors of the affected area, to review those past reports and essentially to look to the have conditions changed in is there a way to make this a positive commuter option for the Wasilla to Anchorage commute.
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. So if previous studies have done, multiple previous studies, so I would say that a good chunk of the groundwork and the research and the engineering has probably been done. So what's the $4.5 million going to be spent on then?
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, the plan would be to actually have the rail extension and the operations be supported through this, so that this is not the study of it. It's if it shows possible to make that operation work, that this would do the appropriate rail extensions, the and support the operations in the startup.
Senator Von Imhoff.
So you're talking this could be potentially a capital budget as well. If you said support the necessary extensions, is it like building rails? And then you said operations, so $4.5 million may be used to actually build some spurs, you just said, and then operate a train?
Correct.
Senator Von Imhoff.
No, thank you.
Senator McKinnon.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll start on line 30 with the commuter rail and ask if you could, do you know how many graded at-grade crossings there are to change?
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator McKinnon, the intent is to use the existing rail, the primary existing rail between Anchorage and Wasilla, and this is the small, essentially, as Senator Von Imhoff had mentioned, the spur, any spur requirements, any offtake at the locations, but it's point to point. Using primarily the existing rail. And this is a capital project.
Senator McKinnon.
Right. As a capital project, yeah. Did you review the past studies on this link?
Through the chair, I personally have not reviewed the studies. I know they exist, and people in Department of Transportation will be working with the task force.
Ms. Pitney, I know that it's a very popular idea. I was involved in those studies. I actually served with my Chamber of Commerce on those. And the rider fee at $10 each direction is not something that most passengers are willing to pay, let alone where you're proposing to put a commuter rail on a track that carries gravel. So I'm wondering if we've done an analysis on displacing payloads that are significantly more money than passengers. A commuter rail like you see in Washington or Oregon, which I've ridden on and benefited from and really enjoy, those are different tracks. So the physical tracks that are on our system don't lend themselves unless you do quite a bit of a curve change for the speeds to actually improve on the system to make it comparable with the highway commute. So I understand that you're asking to investigate this again. I would just say that we've spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, if not millions already, on looking at this particular link. And part of it is the rail crossings being at grade level. Part of it is that there is not a place to stop and pick up other people except in Wasilla to bring them straight in. Part of it is there's not a system in Anchorage to move or park the cars in. And so for folks who took a survey and answered that they supported this particular concept, I would just caution you that the costs associated with this particular thought is extensive, as well as the need for parking in the Anchorage area, which is very limited to where it comes in. Now, we do have parking in the rail area. I'm just not sure if it can accommodate this particular proposal. So, again, I know it's a highly popular idea. And, Mr. Chairman, I've just been through this at least two times already, and the cost of to the commuter who might want to participate in this is fairly high, and the tracks may displace other freight that would be beneficial to the railroad being profitable. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Senator McKinnon. Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you. Director Pitney, do you think it would make sense to present to the Senate Finance or present to the legislature at a later date about this particular project when you've had a chance to update the feasibility, address what Senator McKinnon just talked about in terms of, I forgot what you just said, the crossings, and then whether, I think to me, the Anchorage portion of it, once you get into town and how you go from the rail depot to South Anchorage, let's just say, or wherever your job is in Anchorage, maybe rather than, you know, providing the full amount of funds now, what about just a little bit, just to say, all right, it's feasible in 2019, and here's why, and here's how we're going to go about doing it, and then lay the project out. This is the phase that we're going to have to do to implement it, and this is the surveys that we've done. And then that way we can be confident that the project is ready to go, and then we can appropriate at that point. It's just a thought.
Director Pitney.
Through the chair, Senator Von Imhoff, I believe that the task force would be, and the staff that are supporting the staff, the task force would be happy to have that discussion in earlier than later.
Please proceed.
Starting on line 34, we move into the items included in the January 29th supplemental budget. The first item on line 34 is for Commerce, Community, and Economic Development. This is a financial examiner for Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act filings. There's $103,000 in GFPR, General Fund Program receipts associated with this position.
Are these program receipts, have they, and the program itself, have they been vetted by the ANCSA corporations?
Chair Hoffman, the ANCSA corporations, the filings and complaints that come in for those corporations come through the department, and they have 10 days to respond, and the they have seen an increase in collections because of an increase in filings and an increase in complaints. Did that answer your question? Or
we can talk about it off record. Senator McKinney?
Mr. Chairman, is it typical that we have so many positions being added in a supplemental budget?
Not to my knowledge.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Please proceed.
At the top of the next page, line 35, along with line 36, represents a transfer of $35,000 in general fund program receipts from the Division of Air Quality to the Division of Solid Waste Management within the Department of Environmental Conservation. Line 37 is for the Department of Health and Social Services, Office of Children's Services. This is an increase of $6.5 million in federal receipts. There was also in FY17 a legislative revised program that accomplished the same thing, and as well as in the FY19 budget, there is an increment that adds this amount into the base for that division.
We have half a page here and half a page after that, and the bells are going to be ringing, so I would ask that members hold their questions so we may go through these, and if there are questions that members have, if they could put them in writing and we could get them get a response from the department. Please proceed.
Line 38 is $1 million in unrestricted general funds for the Office of Children's Services foster care base rate. This is a result of a decline in collections of child support, which get passed from the Department of Revenue to the Office of Children's Services for children in their care. Line 39 is $2,895,000 for Office of Children's Services foster care special needs. At the close of fiscal year 17, payments for fiscal year 17 needs were pushed into fiscal year 18. This amount makes that component whole for those amounts pushed forward. Line 40 is $2 million in unrestricted general funds for the Department of Public Assistance within Health and Social Services for the Alaska Temporary Assistance Program. At the end of federal fiscal year 17, the department received notice that they were had failed to meet maintenance of effort requirements. They were able to use some FY18 authority to meet those requirements and avoid penalty. This amount allows them to avoid further penalty in federal fiscal year 18. Line 41 is $5 million for investment management fees for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. Line 44 is a negative $25 million in DGF for the Comprehensive Health Insurance Program. This represents a contribution from Primera to that program for calendar year 2017. On the next page, line 45 is $2 million in unrestricted general funds for the Disaster Relief Fund. This will allow that fund to have a sufficient balance to address any disasters in spring of 2018. On line 46 is University of Alaska bargaining unit agreements. There were two bargaining units that have agreements that affect fiscal year 18, neither of which has a budgetary impact, so that's a $0 item. That brings us to the total of supplemental requests of $178 million in unrestricted general funds. And below the line, we have ratifications included in the January 29th supplemental bill. Line 51 is a ratification for the Alaska Pioneer Home System of $467,000. And also to note, lines 51 and on are in whole dollars, whereas the rest of the spreadsheet was in thousands. Line 52 is a ratification for $1,350,000 for the Division of Public Health. Line 53 is for Medicaid services in $8,715,000. One thing to note on this ratification is it represents a shortfall in federal revenue during that fiscal year. However, that federal revenue was subsequently collected in the following fiscal year. However, because of the way it was collected from the federal government, it could not be posted to this fiscal year, fiscal year 16, that is. Line 54 is $8,800 for mental health housing capital project. 55 is a mental health home modification project with a ratification of $7,000. 56 are unbudgeted capital RSAs within the Department of Health and Social Services, a ratification of $300,000. And finally, line 57 is for the Department of Public Safety Highway Patrol for a special project, a ratification of $4,304,000.
We have approximately 8 minutes. Are there specific questions on the items that we covered in the last half a page and page seven? Can you discuss for the large items on ratifications, what does ratifications mean and what is the legislative process in approving those ratifications?
So Chair Hoffman, ratifications are generally shortfalls in restricted revenue. So, for example, in the case of the Medicaid services, there was $8,700,000 in what the department expected to be reimbursed by the federal government during fiscal year 16 that were either subsequently costs that were disallowed or reimbursed at a lower rate than expected. In this case, they were able to, subsequently receive that revenue. In the case of the much smaller item below it, the $8,800 for the mental health housing project, the department had certain costs that they generally apply to capital projects, which were not billable to one of their fund sources, which they weren't aware of at the time they were billing those charges and were subsequently disallowed, which then requires a ratification. And so this is notification of shortfalls in revenue or costs disallowed by the payer.
Chair Hoffman, from an audit perspective, the ratification is the process from which if there is an audit to clean up that audit finding, the ratification, we need to go through the ratification process. And the Bureau of Highway Patrol item, that $4 million, is an issue stemming from 2011. And there were attempts by the legislature to help address that issue and get it off the books in the 2013 timeframe. By the time we went into the new accounting system, it still hadn't really been addressed. It remains an audit finding. In order to actually get the books cleared, get it off the accounting system, it requires this ratification.
And while we have a few minutes, can you give additional detail to line 44?
So line 44 is payment from Premier to the reinsurance program. In the calendar year 17 reinsurance program, at the end of calendar year 17, Premier Blue Cross Blue Shield provided $25 million to ACHIA, the Alaska Comprehensive Health Insurance Association, specifically for use to pay claims on the reinsurance program. That $25 million then reduces the obligation of state funds needed to cover the program for calendar year 17. So we were able to reduce by that same $25 million amount the state funds needed for the program.
Thank you for that presentation. Are there any final questions by the committee? If not, let me look at our calendar. We do not have any work scheduled this weekend, but may in the future. But on Monday, February the 12th, we will be hearing from Devin Mitchell on credit ratings and debt analysis, Senate Bill 125, extending the bond authorization for the Interior Energy Project. So that is scheduled again for Monday at 9 a.m. in this room. With that, we will stand adjourned.